Okay, the Senate Human Services Committee will come to order. I want to go over the agenda today because we're still not going to hear all of the bills that we have listed. We will have a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 623. We will not do anything with Senate Bill 329. That would be dealing with the prescription drug pharmacy bill, and we're going to meet with have a work group to take a look at that before we move the bill to see where we are on any amendments and so on. We're going to carry Senate Bill 418 over because we don't have the votes right now to pass that. We'll also carry Senate Bill 403 over until probably Tuesday of next week, and we do plan to move both of these bills. We will hear Senate Bill 404 and have a work session. We plan to have a work session on 404. So actually, we only have two bills, and this is going to be a relatively short meeting. So, with that, I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 623, and would you want to kind of run down on that? Did you want to talk?
Yes, thank you, Senator. We did hear this on the first. Basically, what this bill does is repeal a section of law that requires the legislature to approve the rules. We do have dash two amendments, 623-2 amendments that should be in your packet. What these amendments do is it requires that the Oregon Department of Administrative Services give notice to individual members of any interim or session committee with authority over the Oregon Prescription Drug Plan when they propose to adopt these rules. The basic change, as I understand it, is that currently DAS, or the Department of Administrative Services, sends those notices just out to chairs. And this will expand to any committee member. Other than that, it basically keeps Senate Bill 623 intact.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Now, I would like to make a statement about this before we get started. I think there is a good reason for the amendment to this bill because in 90, no, let's see, I guess it was 01, there was a bill that was passed and it was carried by John Minnis, and he thought that what the bill said would be what took place, but there was a change in administrative rules at the direction of the then Governor Kitzhaber, and it had to do with the budget. And I don't know if there was a direction on how to change the rules, but the direction was we need more revenue or something like that. And so there was a rule change that put something into the bill that shouldn't have been there, and that caused a problem. And so I guess this is an effort, and I think it's a good faith effort when we pass a bill that has some magnitude of change. We don't know the full magnitude, but that there be some safeguards, and as a courtesy, I'm certainly happy to hear this amendment. So with that, Mr. Gardner, would you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner, appearing today for PhRMA. We would commend to your attention the Dash 2 amendments. As I mentioned earlier, PhRMA is supportive of Senate Bill 623 in that it removes what I would characterize as the sword of Damocles from over the existing administrative rules of the prescription drug bulk purchasing plan. We think that's appropriate, but we think it's also appropriate to ensure and enhance the legislative oversight of the rulemaking process, which, Mr. Chair, you have described very eloquently and accurately. So this simply makes that the process of notice applicable to members as well as chairs, and we think that's a desirable change because it brings more people into the loop in terms of informing them of what's going on.
Okay, good. Thank you. So with that, I will close the public hearing and open a work session, close the public hearing on Senate Bill 623 and open the work session on Senate Bill 623.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move, Senator Scott. The -2 amendments to Senate Bill 623.
Okay, Senator Starr moves the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 623. Do I hear an objection? Hearing no, well, any discussion? No discussion, no objection. So be it.
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 623 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Starr moves 623 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Would you call the roll, please?
Vice Chair Cruz.
Excused.
Senator Metzger.
Excused.
Senator Von Sanderson.
Aye.
Senator Charles Starr.
Aye.
Chair Morsett.
Aye. Thank you. And I will carry the bill. Senate Bill 623 will go to the floor as directed. Okay, we are going to go to Senate Bill 404. Public hearing on Senate Bill 404. Scott Ekblad and Tom Holt, would you please come up? Yes, and go ahead and review the amendments.
Thank you, Chair. Just briefly, you have your amendment to Senate Bill 404 along with the -1 amendments, and an engrossed version at the top that says -1 amendments. Basically, what the bill does is expands the number of locations in which a practitioner can practice, a physician assistant or nurse practitioner, to be eligible for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. The original bill was not basically written in a way that would expand the program as originally intended, so the -1 amendments do include the words in and or at crucial places throughout the bill that basically allow three different locations. And I will defer to our witnesses to explain that in detail. Thank you, Chair.
Scott, would you like to explain this in detail, please?
Sure. Chair Morsett, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Ekblad, and I'm with the Oregon Office of Rural Health, and I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 404. The Rural Health Services Loan and Payment Program is a valuable resource for many rural communities. While many physicians, nurse practitioners, and physician assistants go to school with the intention of practicing in a rural underserved area upon completion of their training, they often find that by the time they're done, their debt is too high to be able to consider a rural practice. The Rural Health Services Loan and Payment Program helps pay their graduate school loans, thereby enabling them to choose a rural site that pays a lower salary. Rural Oregon communities that were once at a disadvantage when trying to recruit these new graduates can use the potential of loan repayment to help level the playing field, so to speak. The Rural Health Services Program makes loan repayment awards in December of each year. In 2004, awards were made to 2 physicians, 4 nurse practitioners, and 1 physician assistant. These figures represent a typical annual cycle of the program, and since the inception of the program, the year that the program made its first awards, which was 1992, 41 physicians, 42 nurse practitioners, and 23 physician assistants have been awarded loan repayment. Of those 106 clinicians, 45 or 42% of that 106 have declined their loan repayment award. There's a variety of reasons why healthcare practitioners decline these loan repayment awards. Some choose a more financially lucrative practice in an urban area. Some go to another state. Others don't give reasons at all. The fact of the matter is that some decline these awards because they can't find a suitable practice site in which to fulfill their obligation after the award is made. Many of our areas of unmet healthcare need, which defines the areas in which they can practice to fulfill their obligation, are in fact areas of unmet healthcare need because there is no practitioner and in effect no infrastructure for someone to be able to go and begin practicing. The only option for someone like that would be to start their own solo practice, and of course for financial reasons that's just not a feasible option for them. Senate Bill 404 expands the range of communities in which a Rural Health Services Award recipient can practice. It retains the original intent of the program, which was to provide recruitment and retention incentives. Yet, at the same time, it increases the probability that an awardee would be able to find a community in which they can settle and fulfill their obligation. So for those reasons, I'm here in support of Senate Bill 404 and would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. The first question is fiscal impact. This will not cost.
It will have no fiscal impact.
No fiscal impact. Could you talk a little bit about the map?
Sure. There's actually two attachments to my written testimony, and the first one is some data from the Oregon State Student Assistance Commission on the awards that have been made so far through the program. The second attachment is the areas of unmet health care need as defined in statute, and these designations are made every year by our office, the Office of Rural Health. And the map, as you can see, is divided into shades of orange and shades of blue, and everything that is a shade of orange would be an area that would be a qualifying site for the practitioners that are currently included in this program.
Question? Yes, Senator Montes Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm surprised that Bandon is included here.
Bandon?
It's not an impoverished area.
No, Senator Montes Anderson.
You could have her loan repaid by going. I'd love to go there. Good golf.
Senator Montes Anderson, members of the committee. There are a number of factors involved in the formula that's used to determine underservice, and low birth weight is one, infant mortality rate is another, number of practitioners per population is a third, and sometimes communities that are wonderful to go and be a tourist in don't necessarily have that great a health care support system. So
what is the white?
I see
Oregon counties.
Correct. The white sections on this map, Chair Morissette, members of the committee, represent either an urban area or areas of forest.
Okay. Okay. And other things sprinkled around in between, among them. Okay. That's interesting. Urban area or forest. Okay. Senator Wesley, would you come up, please, and then we'll go to Tom. We'll have you testify before Tom, Halt, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Senator Ben Westland, District 27. I'm here today to testify strongly in behalf of Senate Bill 404. I think you're familiar with the subject matter, and just to add a little personal and immediate insight to the need for this bill. I apologize for my tardiness, but the reason I am late is I just had the benefit and indeed the blessing of being able to literally walk across the street from the Capitol here to the Salem Hospital and have a medical procedure done. While that is not the norm for any of us, even if we live in an urban area, I think it highlights the need for this bill as it relates to our fellow Oregonians that live in rural communities. Mm-hmm. Access is a critical issue for rural Oregonians. And by allowing the repayment of student loans for those in the medical field, we help encourage those individuals that would otherwise incur those loans to be able to live, reside, and more importantly, practice in our rural areas. I also would call your attention, and I'm just doing this to give Tom Holt cover. Like Tom, I too failed to make copies, which we will have made and presented to you. copied article from a USA Today article entitled Medical Miscalculation Creates Doctor Shortage. And the issue was that by the year, I think it was 2020, we were expected to have 165,000 additional physicians in this country. That has fallen well short of the mark. And indeed, today we are looking at a physician shortage. It's just the dynamic of the social demographics. Many of our physicians, as well as nurse practitioners, medical professionals, are reaching retirement age, and the pipeline has not been adequately filled. That exacerbates the problem in rural Oregon, because most of these physicians will locate in urban areas. That is natural and to be expected. So anything we can do to help incent physicians and medical practitioners locate in rural areas, I think, is worthy of your consideration, and I would urge your strong support as well, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Okay.
Questions? Thank you.
Very welcome. I'll get this copy for you.
Yes, sir. Yes. Tom Holt.
Chair Morissette and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tom Holt, Executive Director of the Oregon State Pharmacy Association. Thanks to your excellent staff, you should have before you now the Dash 2 amendments, which I'm here to speak to.
Good.
Essentially, what these amendments do very simply is add pharmacists to this program.
Okay.
We, like other areas of health care, have a severe shortage of labor, and it's especially acute in the very rural areas of the state. I can tell you that in my role at the association, two of the most frequent conversations I seem to have recently in the last number of months is with owners of small pharmacies well east of the Cascades looking to hire people, and they're having great difficulty competing against the larger operations that have the ability to offer more substantial salaries, typically to be in an urban area. And things of that nature, and also with students who are about to graduate, and they have fairly high debt these days by the time they get out of what is a now 7-year program for pharmacy. And I've had a number of conversations with graduating students who basically say, you know, look, I'm from a small town, I'd love to go back and practice there, but I can't turn away the differential between rural and what's available to me urban. Our average age now of a pharmacist in a rural or frontier area of this state is around 49. That's substantially older than practitioners in the urban areas. And in the very small communities and amongst the smaller pharmacies, that average age is higher yet. And we know that when there are not pharmacy services available, we don't have health care in the community. We recently lost a pharmacy down in Merrill, near the California border, east of Klamath Falls, simply because they were unable to find someone to come and work there. And now the people in that community are needing to travel some distance to obtain pharmacy services. So we're hoping that this could be some small measure to help with that. We have defined who would be eligible in this amendment quite narrowly. Only those who work at
For the benefit of Mr. Ekblad, who is sitting next to you and who is supporting this bill and may not have seen the Dash 2s, I'm not. So could you just walk through it very clearly so
sure.
We all know what it says?
The main elements of...
Excuse me. Do you have a copy of the Dash 2s?
I do.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
The Dash 2s, what we did in these amendments was we followed basically the same criteria in terms of time of service and the percentages of payback as for other practitioners in this section of the law. But we added something in terms of restrictions on who would be actually eligible to participate in the program in terms of pharmacists. If you look on the first page, and the guts of it really are from lines 14 to 21, actually 18 to 21, the criteria laid out are that the pharmacist must make a commitment to practice at a pharmacy that's not part of a group of six or more pharmacies under common ownership and is in a medically underserved area as defined essentially by the Office of Rural Health, I believe.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Senator Monson.
Oh, six seems like a lot. I mean, is that common for a pharmacist to have six pharmacies or a group pharmacies?
Chair Morris, Senator Monson, Anderson, the reason I picked that number is that in looking at our data on pharmacies, there are a fair number of pharmacies where there are two or three under some common ownership through partnerships. Sometimes there's a pharmacist will own two. There aren't really very many up beyond that. So it was a way of kind of getting into an area where we would not be negatively impacting people who would probably be very fit very well with this program, but not at the same time allow, say, a large chain that has 4,000 stores nationally to take part. They have their own resources and plenty of resources to deal with this problem.
Just a follow-up then? And then, so for instance, a Safeway that has a pharmacist in a rural area, they would not be eligible.
Chair Morissette, Senator Miles Anderson, that is correct, because they would be under way more than six. So I believe Safeway actually operates something like 60 pharmacies in this state.
Thank you.
Okay. My trusty assistant said you're deleting some ORSs there.
Chair Morissette.
Okay. Delete lines. Okay. 28, 29. On page 2, delete. Or delete. Okay, go ahead.
That is not something we asked to be done. That was something LC did, and I only got these a few minutes before the hearing, so I can't even speak to what that is.
Mechanical.
It's something technical. It's not something that we asked for.
Okay. Continue, please.
Essentially, what the amendment does in the first section is that it lays out that for the first 5 years of practice is when you're eligible, and then it also says that you have at least three. There's sort of another layer where one could be there for 3 to 5 years. And that's just following along the same intervals that the other practitioners have. So we were just following that. And then elsewhere, it just defines, ties into, what is a pharmacist licensed under ORF 689 on page 2, and then defining that a pharmacy student has to be qualifying for the loan, and then, of course, it would only apply then to those who make an application of the program after the date of enactment. So in the simplest terms, what the amendment does overall is add pharmacists to the list under the same time commitments expected of others, but with a much greater restriction than others in terms of the numbers of people who could even participate. If we looked at, just in total, I wasn't able to drill through our database quite to this level of how many people would be able, how many individuals who are licensed would be eligible based on these types of pharmacies. I can tell you that there are fewer than 140 pharmacists statewide in rural or frontier areas of practice in the community setting. So it would be some subset of that if we looked at just who's there today. And the program itself, I believe, limits to a maximum of 10. So I think we'd see the fairly small numbers like the other practitioners have been in this program.
Okay, can we do that? Yeah, let's standard ease for now. First of all, Scott, do you have any problems with
Chair Morissette? No, I do not.
Normally, having received these before, we would do all of the detail work about talking to LC about why they remove things and so on. You want to go ahead and call it?
Yeah, we will.
Stand at ease. Yeah. Let me tell you the reason that I asked you to come down. I said, ordinarily when we get an amendment and there are things removed, we have time to check it out beforehand. Rick will take a look at it. He will call you and so on and so forth. And so rather than not do due diligence, we thought we would simply check to see if there was anything that you think or we think should not have been removed. And 99%, it's probably a technicality, and so there's no problem, but we just wanted to be sure so we don't have to come back to do something other.
Or I get fired.
No.
I'm Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Holly Robinson from Legislative Council. I sort of wish I had a bolt and a blackboard to describe or explain this to you, but let me do the best I can. Over the course of the last 10 or 15 years, the drafting in the Office of Legislative Counsel has gotten much more precise. And we used to use the reference as used in this act, as opposed to, let's say we create a definition, and we say this definition as used in this act. as opposed to Section 1 of this Act, Section 2 of this Act. Well, if you have a 10 or 15 section bill, and that definition only applies to Section 2, but you've actually applied the definition erroneously to Sections 1 and 3 to 15, then when the bill gets codified and you get all these extra numbers, because the initial reference was this Act, you have to put in every subsequent ORS number that was referred to when you described this Act, even though the reference that you're talking about may have only applied to one particular section. Mm-hmm. And so over time, we have been trying to correct this Act problem, because in this particular case, when all of these tax credits were adopted, some of them went into ORS 3.16, and the rest of the language ended up in Chapter 440. But they were references to this Act, mm-hmm. but they weren't pertinent to whatever was being discussed. And so there is, in fact, no correlation between where these are coming out of mm-hmm. and the underlying statutes. But because we used to use this very broad phrase of this Act, which describes Sections 1 to 80 or 1 to 10, as opposed to this definition as used in 1 to 3, uh-huh. we ended up with all these extraneous references because of the global use of the word this Act. And so all we've done in this case, and we went back to the enabling legislation, is that the tax credits ended up in one section and the office and other things ended up in another section, but the sentence becomes illogical. The sentence becomes illogical because there's no correlation between the statute that you're reading and, in this case, the tax credit. So if somebody actually bothers to do the cross-reference, they'll say, why is this cross-reference here? It doesn't make any sense. And in our office, we go, aha, it's a this Act problem. Huh. And that's 99 times out of 100, that's the problem.
Okay.
And so good. That's what it's there. And if you actually read the words in the statute, you would say, why are they tying these two things together? It's illogical. And the answer is, it is illogical. And unfortunately, this is the arcana sometimes of what we do. We like to be precise. But that's what it means.
Yeah.
Do you have the bill? So I can actually read this, so I can actually demonstrate what I'm talking about here.
Well, I appreciate the explanation, because that's helpful. I mean, it's just in general, it helps me to understand how you draft new language.
Well, and you'll notice more and more. Thanks, Rick. If you look, for example, in the sentences where this is coming out, the Office of Rural Health does not adopt criteria to be applied to medically underserved communities for the purposes of the tax credit statutes. They stand on their own, and there is no determination within them. It's that necessitates the office doing anything for these purposes. But as this was originally drafted, it probably said, for the purposes of this Act, mm-hmm. and this Act, which probably had 8 sections, then we have to go in and for each of those sections mm-hmm. apply the statute number, even though logically it makes no sense.
Okay.
Go ahead. That's why I wish I had a blackboard.
Rick has a question.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Holly, if the decision was made today to adopt the dash ones and dash two amendments, and the dash ones are engrossed in the version you have, and the dash twos are the ones that were handed to you, are there any conflicts?
Mr. Chair, Committee Administrator, no, I don't believe so. I just have the dash twos, but there shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. Okay. Good. Thank you.
Questions? That makes sense. Did I do a good job?
You did a good job.
Hard to explain.
Good. Thank you very much, Holly.
Oh,
appreciate
you're welcome.
It. Good. Okay. Tom, would you like to come back up? And are you finished? Oh. Scott? Where is Scott? Oh, there you are. Are you okay, Scott? Okay. For the record, Scott, would you please come up here and tell us that you're just fine? You have to do it into the microphone. Identify yourself, please.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Scott Ekblad. I'm with the Oregon Office of Rural Health. And Chair Morissette, members of the committee, in response to your question, I'm just fine with that. Thank you.
With what?
I'm fine with the testimony that's been given today and the proposed amendment.
Okay. Well, I guess I wanted to get an understanding that we are okay with the proposed amendments. We did have the Legislative Council come in and explain them to us, and you had not seen the amendments beforehand, I don't think, and I just wanted to be absolutely certain that your office was fine, was okay.
Yeah, Chair Moore said our office is certainly fine with the concept of adding pharmacists to this program. There's certainly a shortage of those health professionals as well in rural Oregon.
Good. Yes, you may ask a question.
Thank you, Chair. Scott, and I was doing a lot of running around. You might have touched on this. We did not have time to get a fiscal impact statement on the Dash 2 amendments, nor the Dash 1s, to be honest. And so the committee would be, if they adopted and passed the bill, would be doing it basically with a fiscal impact on the amendments in front of them. Could you explain, does this have any maybe budget impact or how this would work if these were adopted in terms of the total program?
Yeah, Chair Morissette, Committee Administrator Bacobian, I, as far as I can see so far, there would be no fiscal impact whatsoever.
We will accept that answer, and both from you and from Mr. Holt. So thank you very much, Scott.
Thank you.
So with that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 404, and we will open a work session on Senate Bill 404.
Chair.
Yes.
Senator Starr. Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 404.
Senator Starr moves the Dash 1 amendments. Senator Starr moves Dash 1 amendments to 404. Discussion? Objection? They are moved.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 404.
Okay. Pardon me? Senator Starr moves the Dash 2 amendments to 404. Discussion? Objection? Okay. Dash 2 amendments are part of Senate Bill 404.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 404 as amended to the Senate floor of the DuPass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 404 as amended to the floor with the DuPass recommendation. Could you call the roll, please?
Vice Chair Bruce.
Excuse.
Senator Messenger.
Excuse.
Senator Montanus.
Aye.
Senator Charles Starr.
Aye.
Chair Morissette.
Aye. Senate Bill 404 passes as amended. Would someone like to carry this bill? I'll give it to Cruz.
Yeah.
Senator Cruz will carry it. I'm sorry.
It's whose bill? Yeah, it's Cruz's and
Yes, it is. It's Senator Cruz and Senator Westland's bill, so they can carry it. Good. Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.